You know, there's two kinds of people. There's those that strive and work and labor to touch God, reach God, and then there's those that just stumble on Him. What Sam was saying this morning was she just got out of bed and sort of stumbled on the Lord. There He was sitting in her living room waiting for her. And it's an interesting thing about finding the Lord and just coming upon Him, stumbling upon Him at some point in your life, is that when you sink to His feet, you're like a ship in the water that sinks. And you take others with you when you go down. And when you sink into the waters that flow from His throne and reach His feet, you just take others with you there. We're going to look this morning. We started talking last week or a couple weeks ago about a person, Hagar, the young girl Hagar, that just stumbled upon the Lord. We looked in Genesis chapter 16 and saw that she was a slave girl, that somehow she ended up as a slave in Abraham's house and was a maid to his wife, who became Sarah. She was Sarai at that time. And that because she just had enough of the treatment, she fled and she ran into the desert. She got out there into the desert having run away from her place as a servant, and stumbled upon the Lord. For there He was, and He met her out there in that desert. It says in chapter 16 that after that Sarai had mistreated Hagar, that Hagar fled from her. And that the angel of the Lord, who in the Old Testament, it's another way of saying it, it was a manifestation of Christ, met her there, found her there, near a spring in the desert. It says in this version, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. So Hagar, having no idea of what it was to serve God or who He was or anything about Him other than what she'd been told, just stumbled upon Him. And there He was speaking to her. He asked her that question that we looked at, where you come from and where are you going? And after this experience, after He told her to return and submit, go back to your mistress, submit yourself there, for I'm going to make a great nation out of you, gave her a promise and sent her back to her place that He had chosen for her, that she gave Him the name, "You are the God who sees me." You are the God who sees me. An amazing revelation of God. Amazing. You are the God that sees me. And she called that place Beer Laharoi because she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. I want you to understand that Hagar had no plans to run into God. She didn't set out when she fled Sarai and ran into the desert, running away from her place. She had no plans to run into God. She just stumbled upon Him. There He was. At that point in her life, at that moment in her life, there He was. Speaking to her, revealing Himself to her, so that she said, I have now seen the one that sees me, He sees me. And so she returned. She went back to her place and submitted herself there, but she was not the same person. She was never the same person again. She now knew that there was her God that saw her and that had spoken to her at that place in the desert of her life. So she went back and she spent the next several years, about 14 years or so, in her place. I'm sure that every day wasn't pleasant. Every day wasn't unpleasant. But she continued in her place, and she just went about business, being a slave, being a servant, and brought forth her son and began to raise her son, was a mommy, was a servant. She did all the things that she just had to do. When she was hungry, she made food. When the boy was hungry, she made food. When things had to be done, she did them. She just went about her business, doing what needed to be done. You see, there are two kinds of people we're going to look at today. There's one that strives after God, that labors and crosses every T and dots every I. And then there's another that just stumbles onto God. That in the moments of their life, when they're in that desert place, there he is. They just stumble on him. If you look a little farther on in Genesis, chapter 21, you'll see that at the beginning of this chapter, of chapter 21, that later on, the Lord fulfilled his promise to Abraham and to Sarah. That she, in her old age, conceived and had a child, and that child's name was Isaac. In verse 3, chapter 21, says, Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. And that when Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. And at that time, Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. He was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. So it's 14 years later. And all during those 14 years, Hagar, just kind of unseen, she's doing her work, making the beds and doing what she had to do to get through her daily life as a servant, and was being the mom that she had to be and the servant to Sarah that she had to be and had to be at work on time and came home after dark and did her daily duties and chores and was there doing it. But she wasn't the same person that she was 14 years before, because now she had an eye towards this God that saw her. There was always something there that was aware that there was now God in her life. It didn't make her perfect. Far from it. But it made her a whole different person. So now 14 years later, after her son was born, Sarah brought forth Isaac. In verse 6, Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned. I don't know how long that was. Probably a couple years, I'm guessing. I don't know. But on the day, in verse 8, that Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. This was his son. His son was weaned. This is the son of promise. This is the one that came forth from Sarah in her old age. This is the one that brought laughter, because God did this wonderful and marvelous thing in their lives. But, verse 9, on the day of this great feast, Sarah noticed that Ishmael was mocking. I don't know particularly what he was mocking about, but he was mocking and she didn't like it. So she wanted to get rid of that boy, as it says in 9, but Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking, and she said to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac. And the whole thing distressed Abraham because that was his son too. And he loved that boy. But God said to him, don't be distressed about the boy or the maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. But I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring. So early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water, and he gave them to Hagar and set them on her shoulder and sent her away. And so she ends up in the desert again. The first time she was in the desert, she ran there herself and found God. The second time she's in the desert here, she was thrown out there, sent away, cast off, and she finds God. And I thought about that. It's pretty amazing. She wasn't striving and crossing every T and dotting every I to try to be pleasing to God. She's just going about her daily life, being the slave girl that she was supposed to be, doing her duty, taking care of business. When hungry, eat. When the bed needs to be made, make the bed. When the floor is dirty, clean it. Just do what she had to do every day. There wasn't a particular effort on her part to be anything to God, but she just stumbled on him again. There he was. Because he saw her. Now this time, interestingly, in 14 years earlier, when she didn't know there was a God, really, he found her there. He met her there. He opened her eyes to who he was. This time, when she had wandered back out into the desert of Beersheba, and the water was gone, and she put the boy under a bush, thinking that he's just going to die there. She didn't want to see it. That verse 17, that God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and spoke to her. Now before, he met her there. He came and just met her right there in the desert. Now, why did he just call at her, you know, speak to her from heaven? Now, why? Because all these years, she'd had her eye on him, and he had her eye on her, and they were walking together. So this time, he didn't need to come down into the desert. He just called at her from heaven. Hagar. And just spoke to her from heaven. And he said to her, what's up, Hagar? What's the matter? You know I'm here. You've seen me. I've seen you, and you called me by the one that sees you, that you have now seen the one that sees me, and we've been communing together and talking together. You're a whole different person. You've been walking with me all these years. And it doesn't matter whether you've just been thrown out into the desert or not. I'm here. But you see, there was something more that Hagar needed to know about God. So the Lord said to her in verse 18, lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him a great nation. And then God opened her eyes. Amazing statement. And then God opened her eyes. She who just keeps stumbling upon God in the deserts of her life, in this experience, God opened her eyes and showed her a well. She saw now a source of water that was going to sustain her and keep her and be an everlasting source for her. You know, the interesting thing about a well is not really the source of the water, it's just a way to get at it. The water is in the rock. down amongst the rocks, in the rock. And the well has been dug to provide access to that water. God showed her a well. And her eyes were opened again, because it says he opened her eyes. She didn't just stumble into this place now and see God that saw her. He literally from heaven spoke and opened her eyes so that she saw a whole new aspect of this God that she'd been talking to probably and communing with and had been calling upon for the past 14 years. That he now was a source for her that would never run dry. And we live on a well. We don't live on city water up there in those mountains. We live on a well. We have a well in our yard. And then some of the neighbors have their own wells. And occasionally, like we have one neighbor that came from the city and didn't really know wells very well. So she would run her hose until the well went dry. And there were like three or four other houses on that particular well. She had like a fish tank or something, and she would just let that water run and run and run until the water level got so low the pump couldn't bring it out anymore, and then everybody couldn't shower or do whatever because she ran the well dry. She had to learn how to take care of that well and how not to run it dry. Fortunately, Yvonne and I have our own well. So she wasn't running our well dry, and it didn't really go dry. It just would go down to the point where it needed time to come back up to such a level that the water could be pumped out again. So we have our own well, and in the 4.5 years that we've lived up there, over 4 years rather, it's never gone dry. I remember in my youth, a couple years ago, when I was standing in this church, and the pastor came up to me and he said, God has sent you to the backside of the desert. And you're going to be out there like Moses. And you're going to learn some things about God. And he was absolutely right in that prophetic word. Because God sent us to the backside of the desert. He told us to sit under a particular ministry, and we did for many, many years. I thought it would be maybe 1 year, maybe two, but it was about 25 years. And there's something I learned after several years, that week after week after week, this source of water. You know, the interesting thing about, let me just back up. When I was so dry, I was very religious. And I was in a very religious church organization at that time. But something was missing inside. And I remember looking inside myself one day and seeing that valley of dead men's bones, Ezekiel's dead men's bones. And I was just dried up and dying because I was so religious, crossing every T and dotting every I, and did everything I could to hassle, to give trouble to those that were just worshiping and yielding themselves to the flow of the Spirit of God. It was just religious. And because of it, I was dry as dry could be. Anyway, this particular pastor that God ended up sending us to sit under for all those years, he walked into my office one day. There I was sitting in my office. I was state youth director for the whole denomination out there in Hawaii. And he was about as careful can be, because he knew how much of a persecutor of real truth I was. And so he walked into my office, and when he began to speak, it was like a well of water just burst forth from the ground and began to water my soul. And I remember just weeping, sitting in my office chair, just weeping. And he was trying to be very careful because he didn't want to say anything that would get him in trouble with me. So he just, but as he saw the effect that the waters of God had on me, that I was just weeping as he spoke, he just opened up and he began to just really pour forth that God had put in him. And so for many, many years, we sat under that ministry. And the reason I said all of that was to say this, that week after, we had, at times, we would have four services a week, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday morning. We did that for years. And at some point, I kept thinking, you know, at some point, he's got to run out. There's got to be a point where he's just not going to have it, and we're just not going to break into God and touch God like you did this morning, and we just did that week after week, service after service. And I finally realized that here was a source of water that would never run dry. It just never ran dry. And it would just keep coming, service after service. It wasn't him. It was the well, the water that he had tapped into. And God opened Hagar's eye, her eyes, to a well, a source that would never run dry. Now, we don't know what happened in the rest of Hagar's life, except that she, out of her son came great nations. All Gentile nations. Abraham was the line that became the Jews. Hagar's line and others in the area were the Gentiles. And there were two different peoples here. One that became those that crossed every T and dotted every I and had a set of laws so thick you could climb up on them. I remember, I might have told you this story. It's kind of funny to me that Dr. Laura Schlesinger, anybody ever heard her on the radio? Yeah, I remember her one day years ago when I would listen to her saying that it was kind of funny because her rabbi told her that her son could not ride his bicycle on the Sabbath day. She said, well, why not? Because if he rode his bicycle on the sidewalk on the Sabbath day, he might cross a patch of dirt. And if he crossed a patch of dirt, he would split the dirt open, and that would be plowing, and that would be work on the Sabbath day, so he couldn't ride his bike on the Sabbath day. Yeah. Cross every T, dot every I. It's not just the Jews that are like that. There's a lot of Christians like that too. But then there are the Hagars that just stumble upon God. There he is. Their eyes are opened to a source of water that will never run dry. Never run dry. Now, when you think about, I don't know, what's pleasing to God? Is it those that when they're hungry, they eat? And after they're full, they give thanks unto the Lord for the good land which he has given them? And then there are those of us that won't touch a bite until we prayed because we got to cross the T and dot the I. And I'm not saying it's wrong to pray before you eat. But I'm just saying that there are those that cross every T and dot every I. And then there's those that just stumble on God. There he is in their life. And he's just happy with them. Now, the ones that cross every T and dot every I, they get jealous of the ones that just keep stumbling upon God. And you know, that's exactly what God intended. It's exactly what God intended. He just loves those ones that just keep stumbling on him and finding him, and there he is all the time. Because he wants the ones that cross every T and dot every I to get jealous. And just fall at his feet. When they get hungry, eat. When the bed needs to be made, make it. And they're not worried about whether this is exactly what God wants me to do this minute. They just do it. And when they end up in the desert, which they do, there he is, giving them this tremendous revelation of who he is and what a source he is to them. And what a source of living waters he wants to be to all of us. Now, I want to show you something. In fact, if you'll turn to Romans now, chapter 10, Paul writes about this difference, this two different kinds of people. Romans chapter 10, in verse 19, he says, I will make you envious by those who are not a nation, and I will make you angry by a nation that has no understanding. And in verse 20, because I was found by those who did not seek me, and I revealed myself to those who did not ask for me. Amazing. So I'm going to make you envious by the Hagars of the world. Paul is writing to the Jews. And the same thing can be written to a very religious people. And we know a few very religious people. They're around. In fact, I know what it's like because I was one. Till God got a hold of me and sent me out there in that desert after your pastor here prophesied it to me, and there I was in the desert, learning like Hagar that there is a God. So he said, I'll make you envious by those who are not a nation, verse 19, and I'll make you angry by a nation that has no understanding. I'm just going to make you jealous. I'm going to use this other kind of person here to just make you jealous, because I'm going to be there for them. I'm just going to bless them. I'm going to show myself to them. They're going to stumble on me in the deserts of their life, and I'm going to be there. I was found by those, verse 20, who did not seek me. Now, for most of us, that's us. We came out of this other line of people, this Gentile nation, and we just stumbled on God, and he found us at some point in our life. I remember asking the church one time years ago, a lot of people there, a couple hundred people there, how many of them had godly parents that led them into the things of God? And there might have been one hand in that room that raised. The rest of us just stumbled on him. Out in the desert of our life, there he was, and he revealed himself to us. And eventually revealed to us that he was a source of living water that would never run dry. In chapter 9, verse 25, he says, I will call them my people who are not my people. And I will call her my loved one who wasn't my loved one, who isn't my loved one. This is the way I just love to do things, God's saying. I'm going to do it. And that's who we were. We were not that line of people that became the Jews that eventually got all the laws together and left that initial place with God that Abraham had found, faith, and just started laboring and working to try to be pleasing to God. But God says here, I will call them my people who are not my people. And I will call her my loved one who is not my loved one. And it goes on in verse 26 and says, and it will happen that in the very place where it was said to them, you are not my people, they will be called sons of the living God. Now, if that's not enough to make you jealous, I don't know what is. That's God's idea. It's his plan. It will happen that in the very place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there they will be called the sons of the living God. That's one thing about us very religious people when we're very religious, is that we have everybody else shut out. We consider ourselves the inside and everybody else the outside, or others the outside. And God is saying that it's out there that I'm going to show myself. It's to that people that are considered not my people that are going to become sons of the living God. looking at Romans chapter 11, it talks about branches broken off and the wild branches grafted in. Such was the plan of God. There were those that were raised up in crossing the T's and dotting the I's, and then there are the wild ones that just are grafted in. Now, I don't know about you, but I was just one of the wild ones that got grafted in. And yet, because the stump is holy, the branch becomes holy. Not because we're anything, it's because He is everything. And He is a source that never runs dry. So we're just grafted on. Thank God. He found us in the desert places of our life, like Hagar, showed Himself to us, and eventually revealed to us that He was a well, a source that would never run dry, and she could go. It didn't matter, Hagar, whether you're running away from it, I'll be there. It doesn't matter, Hagar, whether they send you away, I'll be there. I'll be there in all those desert places of your life. And you will become a great nation. This is the stumbling stone. In verse 33 of chapter 9, he says, I will lay in Zion a stone that causes men to stumble, and a rock that makes them fall. This is that stumbling stone. Yeah, I remember the jealousy. I didn't think of it as jealousy. I thought it was my righteousness. When other churches would just worship God, and it was just had beautiful worship, and I was so religious. And I was it. And they were whatever they were. But it wasn't what I was, and it just made me angry. And I stumbled over that stumbling stone. Stumbled. Fortunately, I stumbled into God. Just stumbled into Him because He found me in that desert, dry, ugly place of my life and taught me that even if you don't cross the T's or dot the I's, I will be there for you because it's not you, it's me. It's not your effort, it's not your works, it's mine. I have done it all for you, and I have just released the water and the rock to you, and you can come to me, the well, anytime you're thirsty, and drink until you can drink no more. And I will be there. If you look in, if you continue on here, that was the last verse in chapter 9. See, I will lay in Zion a stone that causes men to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. And the one who puts his trust in Him, in God, will never be put to shame. The one that puts his trust in this rock, in the Lord of the water, in the rock that water comes forth from, who puts his trust in that stone, will never be put to shame. Paul goes on to say here in verse 10, brothers, my heart's desire and prayer to God for the Israelites is that they may be saved. For I can testify about them that they are zealous for God, but their zeal is not based on knowledge. Since they did not know the righteousness that comes from God and sought to establish their own, they didn't submit to God's righteousness. They didn't yield themselves, fall upon the stone and be broken. But rather, they're trying to stand in their own righteousness. Verse 3, since they did not know the righteousness that comes from God and sought to establish their own, they did not submit to God's righteousness. Verse 4, Christ is the end of the law, so that there may be righteousness for everyone who believes. the Jew and the Gentile. The one that has learned in their life to try to cross every T and dot every I, and the one like Hagar and most of us that just stumble on God in our life. And there he is. And he reveals himself to us and to that kind of person. Now Moses, verse 5, describes in this way the righteousness that is by the law, by the effort, by that that strives to try to cross the T's and dot the I's. This is what it's like, Moses says. The man who does these things will live by them. But the righteousness that is by faith says, this is the Hagars that just keep stumbling into God. Do not say in your heart, who will ascend into heaven, that is to bring Christ down, or who will descend into the deep, that is to bring Christ up from the dead. God is just saying, the person that lives by the kind of faith I want you to live by is not the person that's saying, how am I going to figure out a way to get there and bring him down? Or how am I going to figure out a way to get down far enough to bring Christ up? You say, no. No. But what does faith say? What is in the heart of that person that when they're hungry, they're eating, when the bed needs to be made, they make it, and they stumble into God early in the morning, on Sunday morning? What's in the heart of such a person? But what does it say, verse 8? The word is near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith we are proclaiming. Verse 9, that if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. Now, what is he saying there? For all my life, really, I've thought of that, looked at that verse and saw it as that God raised him from the dead. That's a verse about the resurrection. That's a verse that's saying, believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. Yeah, but interestingly, the fact that he was raised from the dead in this verse is a given. We know he was raised from the dead. The point of this verse is not that he was raised from the dead. The point of this verse is that God raised him from the dead and not you. Hallelujah. Because that's what he's saying up here. The righteousness that is by faith doesn't say in your heart, who's going to go up there and bring him down? Or who's going to go down and bring him up from the dead? That's not faith. Faith just believes that God raised him from the dead. And because there's something in my heart that believes that, that is what's pleasing to God. That I believe that he did it all. I don't have to climb up to heaven and bring Christ down or descend into the deep to bring Christ up. I just believe that God did it. And that is Abraham's faith. God did it for me. And it says that those that confess him, yes, he's Lord, and believe in their heart that God raised him from the dead, not me, not you, that person will be saved. That's the person that we're talking about here. There's just something about them. They go through life and they don't have to cross every T. They're not worried about crossing every T and dotting every I. Because they believe that God did it for them. He provided their salvation. He raised Christ from the dead. Now, you could try, but you won't be able to do it. Now, you can work and you can strive and you can cross every T and dot every I, but you will never raise Christ from the dead. God did it. And he just loves to find such a person. That's faith. He will find such a person in the desert of their life that they just believe. Their eyes are open, and you know what? They just go back to being a servant. They go back to being a maidservant. They go back to being a Hagar. They're not sweating the load. I remember one time, there was a young woman in the church we were all in out there, and she got very religious, and she was going to spend her time praying. All the time praying. She didn't clean her floor. And finally her husband got really upset. He was getting really aggravated because, I don't have time to clean the house and take care of the kids and cook the food because I'm going to seek God. I'm going to bring him down. I'm going to bring him up. So the pastor got a bucket and a rag and he went out to her house and cleaned her floor for her. Just to show her. It's not you. He did it all. So, when you're hungry, eat. If you're cold, make a fire. I don't know if you've ever been there, but I've been there where you just are worried about everything you do, whether it's right or wrong. Don't worry about it. When you run away from everything and end up in the desert, guess what? God will be there for you. When you finally go back and submit yourself and you think everything's going to work out from then on forever, and you see the fireworks breaking over that Disneyland castle, I mean, it's just all going to be wonderful, but it doesn't turn out that way, and you end up being thrown out into the desert, don't worry. God will be there. God will be there because there's something in your heart that just knows that he did it for you. He provided it all for you. Because you believe in your heart that God raised Jesus from the dead. And you don't have to. Hallelujah. And it's just so pleasant being around such people. You know, they're kind of like Amy Semple McPherson, where they can drive motorcycles into church and they don't care what people think. they can just be themselves. And it's okay because God is there for them. God is there for them. He finds them in those desert places of their life and shows them deeper and deeper revelation of himself. So the point here is that God raised him, not me or you, and that works avail nothing. With regard to your salvation and who you are in God, only believe. Only believe in your heart. Not just that God raised him from the dead, but that God raised him from the dead and not you. Who will ascend into heaven and bring Christ down? Not a living soul. Who will descend into the deep and bring Christ up? Not a living soul. Those are both rhetorical questions. The answer is nobody. But you can try. You can try until you wear yourself out. God just wants you to believe he did it already. And he has opened for you a well into the water that comes forth from that rock that will never run dry. He is yours, and you are his, and you are that people that were not his people that are now called sons of the living God because you just believe that God did it for you. Now, I want to tell you something. Be careful if you have a religious neighbor because that will make them very jealous. Yes, it will. If you know somebody that's very religious and it's got to be this way and it's got to be that way, be careful, because they'll get very upset with you because you just keep stumbling upon God. And they don't. Well, they will, hopefully, at some point. Hopefully, they'll get jealous enough at you that they'll finally say, all right, what do I do to be saved? Get out of this place of strict religiosity and get saved. Just go with God. Just believe in your heart. Confess Jesus as Lord and believe in your heart that God did it all. That God did it all for you. God raised him from the dead. Not you, not your efforts, not all that you try to do and be, but God did it for you. Can you rest in that? Can you rest in him? He did it for you. God raised Jesus Christ from the dead. Not me or you. And that is the faith of Abraham, that God did it.